The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com. And by All Star Vacation Homes, with locations in Kissimmee and Orlando. All Star Vacation Homes offers you alternatives for your Disney vacation with beautiful and affordable homes, condos, and townhomes near Walt Disney World. Hospitality has a new home, and its name is All Star Vacation Homes. Visit them at allstarvacationhomes.com.
Hi there, this is TJ Fry from up near Chicago. Just wanted to wish all the Mickey Milers best of luck at Marathon Weekend. Whether you're going dopey, goofy, or just running one of the other races, enjoy it and have fun. Bye.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 239 of the Mickey Miles Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa from WDW Today and TouringPlans.com. And with me on this Tuesday before the big marathon weekend is Michelle Scribner-McLean. Hello, Michelle.
Hi. I always depend on you to figure out what show it is. So if you don't know, I know we're off to a rocky start. Oh, my. Have you started packing?
Yes, but I haven't finished. Mm-hmm. It's I'd say I'm about 10%.
Yeah, well, that's good. Hey, I don't think anybody had any opinions about our show about medals. Did you? Did you see any opinions?
Nope. No. Nobody wanted to get involved in the meddling, I guess.
Oh, boy. Lots and lots of opinions. So very interesting discussion. Clearly, it's there's no right or wrong answer. But anyway, you have to listen to that podcast if you don't know what we're talking about. Before we introduce our special guests, we have a lot of shout-outs today, and these are all people who are getting ready for one event or another. A lot of them are getting ready for race weekend, and I'm going to do 10 shout-outs. I'm going to say a shout-out to Chris Jancic, who's doing dopey tapering, Jeff Franciski, who did some swimming, Gary Kaplow, who did 10 to 12 miles. He's been sick, and he's catching up. Ryan Treichler, 9 miles. Stephen Moss, 5 to 6 miles. Dave Welty did a half marathon. Jessica Snowden did 11 miles. Derek Anderson did 18 because he's doing the Arizona Marathon and then the Star Wars weekend. Charlie Gessner did a 10K. I'm going to be running with Charlie for the marathon. And Mark Lorenzo is doing some dopey training. And let's do two more. Rick Fries did 11 miles. He's doing Star Wars. And then our buddy Eric Anderson did 7 miles, and he's doing Goofy. So lots of shout-outs to our friends out there listening. Good luck to everybody. If we don't see you.
Good luck to everyone. We hope to see most of you, if not all of you, in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
A little clearing of the throat.
So before I introduce our guests, I just want to say that when I'm running, well, just in general, I like to see this guy coming. He's so friendly and so nice. But when I'm running and I'm running out of steam and need a pick-me-up, I love to see this person on the course. He's a runner himself, but he's also somebody very important to Run Disney, one of many.
I look for him every single time. And actually, one of the reasons why I wanted to do this podcast is I wanted to find out where he's going to be doing, what he's going to be doing this mm-hmm. weekend. So without further ado, let's introduce our friend. He comes by way of Troy, New York, but he's now in Claremont, Florida. Phil Taylor. Hi, Phil.
Hello.
Welcome back, Phil.
Good to be here. Thanks.
Now, Phil, rather than me tell everyone why we have you on the show, why don't you tell us what you're going to be doing this weekend?
Sure. So I volunteer with Run Disney, and specifically as a team leader. And so each year they schedule you out. They schedule us out several months in advance. So this year I was unable to be there for the 5K, but for the 10K, I'll be doing a few different things. First, I'll be overseeing the volunteer tent with a couple of other people. So when the volunteers come to check in, I'll help with that. Then I'll switch over to the corral area where everyone gets started. So as you're getting into your corrals and all those volunteers, make sure that you're not trying to skip into the corral two corrals up. I'll be the one kind of overseeing those volunteers. So you'll see me around the corrals at the 10K. And then when we send everybody off and the gun has gone off, everybody leaves, me and my team will switch over to runner finish, and we'll provide what's called runner direction, which basically, you know, those people that tell you you can't stop right there, you have to keep moving. That's
in a very gracious and kind way, you mean?
We try to be, except when runners yell at us, which unfortunately happens.
Oh, my.
But most people are good about it. But, yeah, so we'll be there for the 10K. And then the 10K is kind of easy. 5 and 10K are both kind of easy from a volunteer standpoint. So we tend to take teams and spread them into a few different areas. Then at the half and the full, I'll be doing runner direction for the beginning, for the race start, which again means at the corrals. And I'll be doing that for both the half and the full. And then my shift is over after that. So then I'll be done. I'm hoping to go to the Eddie McCoy meet up at the bar meet there on Friday. So we'll see how the day goes. But yeah, that's where I'll be this coming weekend for the marathon weekend. Looking forward to it.
That sounds fantastic. So many questions. I'm always so interested to hear about all the different things you do. And I know runners get jackets or they get t-shirts. It sounds like you guys are, definitely earn. You're going to be running around as much as the runners are.
Yeah.
I know we talked about this when we had you on the show before, but just remind us, how do you become a volunteer for a Run Disney event? What do you need to do?
Yeah,
you don't need to live in Orlando, right?
No. Lots of people that volunteer do not live in Orlando. There's actually a Mickey Miler from Maine that is volunteering this coming weekend at the full marathon. And I'm actually right now trying to get her switched over to my team so that she can be on my team. So there's people from all over that come in and volunteer. So it's really easy. Like if you're just doing one of the races and you want to be available to volunteer at the others, you can do that. What you do is you go to the Run Disney website, and I don't know exactly where it is offhand. I didn't look it up before the podcast, but just look for something that says volunteer. You could even just Google Run Disney volunteering at Run Disney races, and you'll get right to the link.
Isn't it like Disney Sports Enthusiast or something?
So it is. So yeah. I think I'm not sure for sure if this has to do with the fact that, Disney is obviously a for-profit company, and so to volunteer at a for-profit company might create some kind of weird thing. But basically the volunteering goes through the Disney Sports Enthusiast group. And then for each race, there's a particular designated charity for each race. Or I should say for each race weekend. So for example, like at the Mount Everest, it was like the Snow Leopard Foundation or something like that. And so what that means then is that when you're volunteering, you're not volunteering technically for Disney. You're volunteering for the Disney Sports Enthusiast group. And specifically, that volunteering service is benefiting that charity, and then Disney is donating money to that charity, and I think people are encouraged to raise money for that charity as well. So,
gotcha. So, go ahead.
I'm just finishing off your question there. Go on the Run Disney site, look for the thing where you sign up to be a volunteer. And for a regular volunteer, the best thing to do is to just get on the email list. You'll fill out something basically saying, like, I'm interested in volunteering. And then what's going to happen is when they're ready to open up volunteer registration for a particular race, you're going to get an email, and it's just going to say, hey, volunteer registration is opening up on Wednesday at 12 p.m. or whatever. And then you'll be ready with the link, and you'll want to sign up very quickly because it is Disney and people love to be a part of it. The volunteer slots actually fill up sometimes within a few days. Especially for some of the bigger races. So the important thing to do is just sign up quickly and give yourself as much availability as possible. So just say you're available for everything. And then what's going to happen is they're going to schedule you for where they need you. And you'll get an email back saying, we've scheduled you for this, and you'll be, your time is this. And you'll get a letter in the mail with kind of a tag that gets you in through security. And then, it's a lot of fun.
That's cool. So if you just Google Disney sports enthusiast, it's actually going to take you to ESPNWWOS.com. And that's ESPNWideWorldOfSports.com. And let me see if there's a sublink on it. And then it's /volunteer-opportunities. So, but if you just look up Disney sports enthusiast, you'll get there. All right, Mike.
So, Phil, I know that about a month ago, we saw you down in Florida, and you told you and I had a very interesting discussion, and I would love to have you share that with our audience regarding the because you have volunteered in the past, and you have you were overseeing a water stop or two, and so you've got some very good experience with water stops. Could you tell everyone how the whole operation begins at, I believe you said, like 3 o'clock in the morning with a water stop?
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, you do. You start up very, very early. I'm just looking for the exact time, but yeah, it's typically a few hours before the race starts, and you'll set up, like, whether it's a water stop or a Powerade stop. Let's see. So here's an example. I'm just pulling out they give us these little volunteer operations survival guide. I'll post a picture in the group so people can see what they look like. But the water for the start line, that team is getting there at 12:30. No, the team leaders get there at 12:30 a.m. The volunteers get there at 1:30 a.m. The bus leaves at 2 a.m. The volunteer location is ready at 3:30 a.m. I mean, it's crazy how it's very, very precise the way they do it all. But let's say it's a smaller race and there's 12,000 people running, and you're at a water stop. Well, not so much for the first water stops. Like, if you're at water stop one, you might not set up 12,000 cups. But if you're at water stop, three or four, you're halfway through the race, you're towards the end of the race where people are starting to get more and more thirsty, you're setting up at least as many cups as there are runners, and you're ready to set up more. So it's not uncommon if you set up, say, 10,000 cups to then realize about halfway through the race that you're going to start to run out. And so then you set up more. It really depends on the weather, you're going to set up a lot of cups of water and Powerade, and you're going to do that at every single water stop or Powerade stop. So that means that you can have, literally hundreds of thousands of cups for a race that have all been set up by volunteers. So it's a pretty significant operation. Actually, it's kind of funny. At the team leader meeting that we had on Friday night, they just started creating these videos to teach people how to make the Powerade, because it's kind of a process when you're making, if you can imagine making 20,000 cups of Powerade, and it comes in powder form that we mix with water. So we do it that, right there on the spot. And so they made this whole video. And when I get the link for that, I'll share it to you guys. It's kind of interesting, but yeah.
This is probably a silly question, but is there some sort of a protocol for how full you're supposed to make? I mean, you wouldn't put it all the way up to the top because people would spill the water. You just do halfway?
Yeah, that is the protocol, is half.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want you to do half.
And how do you figure that for different races, people are going to take different amounts? So for a 5K, they might just take one drink at a water stop versus a half marathon where they might take two or three?
Exactly. So at a 5K, you're only really going to have two water stops, and you're not going to do any Powerade at a 5K. You're only going to have water. And so water stop one at a 5K, if there was, like, say, 5,000, 6,000, what was there at the Happy Haunted 5K? I think there were 7,500 runners.
I think that's about it.
So I think we set up maybe 5,000 or 6,000 cups for that one, because the weather was okay. It wasn't like crazy hot or anything. But then at water stop two, they probably set up a little bit more because people were a little more out of breath there and out of water. So yeah, you're setting up. Figure at least for every race, if there's, you're setting up close to the amount of runners that there are. So yeah.
And then that goes up if the temperature goes up. So if, exactly. A few years ago we had a half marathon and marathon when it was very, very warm. How does that figure into the formula?
You may do double. I mean, you play it by ear. So before the race, the way you do it is you set up water on you'll have, like, say, 15 or 20 tables for a big race. Like a full marathon, you're going to have 15 or 20 tables, 8-foot tables full of cups of water. And you set them up on the table, and of course everybody's wearing gloves to make sure it's all sanitary. And you fill the whole table with water. And then they have these big plastic boards that go over top of all the water. And you put that down to kind of create a layer. And then you pour another whole layer of water on top of that, cups of water. And for a typical race, you'll go anywhere from 3 to 4 stories tall of water. So you kind of create a tower of water at each table. And then if you stopped and looked near the beginning of a race, what you would also see is that underneath all of those tables, they have cases of Dasani water. They come in like 1 liter bottles, cases of them ready to go. So that as you start to run out, you'll get your volunteers jumping in and you know, kind of refilling them. So we're getting, you know, putting out new layers of water and getting going on that. And then throughout the race, we're in radio contact with all the different race officials. And so, you know, we'll get a call like, let's say you're at mile, you know, 15 or 20 and you're at water stop, you know, 7 or 8, whatever it might be. We might get a call on the radio that says, you know, last runner just finished, you know, water stop 2. So now you kind of have a sense like, okay, that's how far we are away. So do we need to put out more? Are we okay? Should we just let this ride? And so you kind of play it by ear based on how many people are still coming at you. But what you don't want to do is runners seem to come in groups. And so you'll have some time where there's nobody running at you. And then all of a sudden you'll have it's what feels like 1,000 people run through. And so you don't want to be in a situation where you don't have enough water. So we tend to go with more than we need. And then whatever is left afterwards, Disney has these kind of weird trailers that they attach to a truck where you just kind of toss all the table right into it and all the water kind of sluices out and they recycle the cups. So,
oh, wow. So how many volunteers are at a typical water stop? Does it depend on the race? Because it seems like so many.
Yeah. So I'll give you an example. I did the, I think I was at Water Stop 1 at the 5K at Tower of Terror. And I believe I had, it was either 12 or 16 volunteers for that one. So it was pretty small. And, you know, we didn't have to put out a ton. So it was, I mean, it was all pretty easy. At the Tower of Terror last year, not this past fall, but in 2013, I was at the water stop, water and Powerade stop directly behind the baseball stadium. And I want to say we had 60 volunteers for that one. And we had probably 24 tables, including water and Powerade.
Per stop?
For a stop.
Wow. Yeah. I never realized. 24 tables. Wow.
Over the course of a year, there are 10,000 volunteers that volunteer with Run Disney. And you can pretty much guarantee that on marathon weekend, you're loaded up like crazy. So it's a lot of volunteers at all the different races, but it really depends. You'll have as many as 80 people at a water stop if it's water and Powerade and if it's later in the race, because it just takes a lot of people to set up all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
So another question I have is, you mentioned that you're connected with people on the radio. I mean, to me, what came to mind is something like Mission Control, where there's so many moving pieces. Does it all go back to John Hughes, or are there people who handle water stops and they report to the you know, another person? How many administrators are managing just the volunteers? I know you probably don't know the whole organization.
Well, I mean, the volunteers actually kind of, they're completely separate from the other stuff that John Hughes would be involved in. So the way it works is you've got your regular volunteer, the person who is, you know, has signed up on the website and is volunteering at a race. And then you have the team leader. And then you have, above the team leaders, you have what we call zonies. So if you imagine you've got a group of volunteers overseen by one, maybe two team leaders, depending on the size of the project. And then you've got a kind of a zone leader who's over 3 or 4 volunteer zones, and they're kind of running back and forth between all those areas, often on a golf cart or something like that. And so you're going to be in closer radio contact with that person. They only really do the zone leaders for the bigger races, to be honest. But then your key Run Disney volunteer staff are also going to be on those radios at all times. So there's actually only like six people that are full time for Run Disney. It's actually a pretty small crew. And then they just pull in all the resources, you know, of Disney's various departments to make it all happen. So those six people are going to be on the radios at all times. But there isn't, I mean, there honestly isn't a whole lot of stuff that has to be communicated via the radios, because they do so much planning in advance that, and so many of the volunteers and the team leaders have been doing this for years. I mean, there's some of these team leaders have been volunteering for 15, you know, 18, 19 years. So it kind of runs itself, to be honest.
I have so many more questions.
Michelle, just I was just looking through my book here.
Sure.
But just to give you an example, at Water and Powerade Stop 4.1, be 60 tables of water and Powerade.
Holy moly. I would have estimated 10. Like, and I would have thought maybe, I don't know.
10 is a 5K fun run.
Wow. Wow. That's so interesting. I don't know if you, this was actually, I have so many questions for you. This is an extra one. Did you hear about any of the wind situation at the Disneyland?
Yes.
From volunteers. Yeah, I know they were removing those plastic sheets. I was thinking, you know, the things that separate the cup layers. And just people were just holding those liter Dasani bottles and filling them up, you know, as people ran by. One other thing that I know that volunteers will do, I actually run with a water belt that holds little, you know, bottle with a cap. And I've gone up, and I know a lot of other people do this, but don't be shy about saying, can you just fill up my bottle? I usually kind of go towards the end where the people aren't as busy, and they're always willing to do that too.
Absolutely.
So with Powerade or water. I want to know, what can runners do to make your life and the life of all those volunteers easier? You know, I know that there's a protocol with going through these water stops. There's a lot going on, a lot of people, a lot of cups, a lot of water, slippery. What can we do either there at the end of the race or anywhere along the way?
Sure. Well, you know, I think first of all, just, you know, recognize that everybody you see at all the different water stops, and almost everyone you see, even if they're wearing a very official looking Run Disney polo, they are volunteers. And so, you know, they got up early and drove there, because they love doing it and it's a lot of fun. So just, you know, they're not staff, you know, they're volunteers. And so they're really doing that to be nice for you. So just be nice to them. I know that everybody who's on Mickey Miles podcast is going to do that, but.
So first thing is make sure every time you take a water, interact with a volunteer, that you say, thank you for volunteering.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's a great thing to do. But you know, some really specific things that would be helpful is, like, if you're going through a water stop, and let's say it's kind of a bit of a bottleneck and people have stopped and they're kind of walking through it because it's jammed up, you might be tempted to say, hey, I'm trying to keep a particular pace here and there's all kinds of room behind these tables. I'm just going to run behind this table. But here's what you don't understand is that behind those tables is a work zone. And so, like, those plastic sheets that we use as layers, if we've got a ton of people coming through, we might just throw those behind us. And then when we have a minute, we'll pick them up. And so if you run behind a table, you might step on a 4x8 foot long, you know, shiny piece of plastic, and you'll go down on your butt and it's not going to feel good. And that's because you've stepped into a work zone, not a running zone. So don't run behind the tables when you go through a water stop.
That's so important, Phil. You know, we mentioned, we talk about, advising people going for the first time at a Run Disney event, we try to remember to talk about things like that and stay inside the cones and don't run on the grass. So that's a very, very good point. One of the things I wanted to ask you was...
do you have any other ideas for tips?
I was just gonna say, when you're in the finisher's chute, what they really want you to do is, you know, you go through the finisher's chute, you get your medal, and then there's always kind of that area where, like, you're moving towards the bathrooms or the changing rooms, especially if you're at, like, the wine and dine. And everyone is tempted to kind of find some little corner to congregate and wait for their friends to come through because their friends are a little bit behind them. And that, imagine if you know, even a fraction, even if 25% of the people wanted to wait, it gets really dangerous because people are kind of moving around and they're walking around, and it's just not a safe place to be kind of hanging around. And so they ask us to really move everybody out of the way. And it's really important that you kind of just go to the very end of the line and then Like, for example, at Wine and Dine, there's always kind of a corral in the middle there. Just go and wait in there and just do that and really just kind of get out of the way because it's difficult and everybody's kind of hanging off on the sides waiting. So, yeah.
And don't give the volunteers a hard time about it.
Exactly. Yep.
You don't have to worry about me, Phil, because I'm never there. People are waiting for me, so I'm not waiting for people. So
I think I was talking to Michelle.
You were actually. I felt official though because you had the jacket on.
There you go.
When someone hears the word volunteer, they think, okay, this is free help. These are people who are giving up their time, and they love what they do, and they come back every year after year. But Disney, to their credit, rewards all these volunteers. And could you tell us what each volunteer will receive for giving up his or her time?
So if you're volunteering at a half marathon or a full marathon, every volunteer is going to get a one-day pass to a Disney park. So it's just a ticket that expires after 1 year. And like for a half marathon, it's going to be just a regular one day, one park pass. For the full marathon, I think they make it into a park hopper pass. And every volunteer is going to get that at the completion of their shift. They don't get it before, they get it at the end. Because there is, every now and then, there's an issue with volunteers kind of jumping ship and deciding they don't really want to be there. And they go and sleep in their car. And then they don't get a ticket. So everybody gets a ticket. If you're at one of the smaller races, like the 5K or the 10K, then what you're going to get is points that add up to a ticket. And the way it works is it's 1 point for every hour. And once you get to 16 points, then you get another ticket. So that actually might take several races to get there over the course of a year where you're earning 16 points. And then when you earn those 16 points, then they actually mail you the ticket. And so they do that, you know, you might get it over the course of a year. But for the half and the full, you get a ticket that night, they hand it to you on your way out. And then if you're a team leader, they do like a little upgrade. So for a 5K or a 10K, whereas a volunteer gets points towards a ticket, a team leader is going to get a ticket, regardless of how many hours it was. If you're, let's say at a half marathon, every other volunteer is going to get a one-day park pass. We're going to get a park hopper pass. At a full marathon, the volunteers are going to get a one-day pass. We're going to get a two-day pass. So they kind of do a little bit special for the zoni for the team leaders, and then they actually do something even a little bit better for the zonies. But then, in addition to the tickets, they also are going to give you some piece of apparel to wear at the race. So for the winter races, it's typically a jacket. And that serves a couple of purposes. It's reflective, and so it's a safety gear. It's got a hood in case it's raining, and it's branded to the event. So it kind of groups all your volunteers together so you know that these are the volunteers. And the way they do that is the volunteers will have like a brightly colored jacket, and the team leaders will have a gray jacket. So they're kind of separated out so the volunteers know who to go to with questions. And then for the races that are in the warmer times of the month, like the May races or the October races, those are going to be a shirt. Typically, a shirt is what you'll wear for that. And then the team leaders get these really nice black Run Disney polos that have the Run Disney logo on it, and then it just says volunteer underneath that. And we have two or three of those that we can use over the course of the weekend, so that we kind of look a little more official. And it's the same. It's actually the same polo that the staff wear. It's just that the staff ones say staff and ours say volunteer. And then in addition to that, they'll have like food for you as you check in, and sometimes they'll have some other little thing that they're giving you. And then for the team leaders, they'll do a appreciation party once a year, just to kind of say thank you to all the team leaders. So this past year it was at Hollywood Studios, and they had a great dinner for us, and then they took us over for a dessert party at Fantasmic, and they'll do something like that every year, where they really kind of do a special night for you.
Oh, very cool. I have a few other questions for you, Phil, if you have time. I want to know, you mentioned sometimes, occasionally, a volunteer doesn't work. What are, like, if you could build a perfect volunteer, what are the components of a great volunteer?
just being available to do whatever's needed, just kind of having a spirit of saying, hey, you tell me where you need me and I'll jump in and do it. Those are the best volunteers. The difficult volunteers are the ones that have volunteered so many times that they feel like nobody can really tell them what to do. And the difficult thing there is that it's just as difficult if you've got 20 people that are trying to be the boss. And it's just kind of hard if you've got too many cooks in the kitchen, right? So I love the volunteers who just say, hey, I've done this for like 10 years. You just tell me where you need me. I've probably done it. So you just show me what you need me to do and I'll jump in. Those are the best volunteers, because then you can really, you can get the job done well and you'll get it done quickly. And then you end up having some time before the runners start to come through to really just kind of have some fun, get to know each other and maybe get a team picture together and just kind of enjoy hanging out together. So you see a lot of regular faces, right? So it really, it becomes kind of a fun thing where you see a lot of friendly faces that you've gotten to know over the years.
So, Phil, sticking with the last three words, over the years, you've done a lot of volunteering. You've spent a lot of hours being a team leader, being a volunteer. Is there any one experience that comes to mind that you always turn to and say, that's my favorite moment in my volunteering, you know, career?
I think it's probably there's a few families that volunteer together, where you have like mom and dad and kids that are old enough to volunteer. I think you have to be 14 years old to volunteer, and so it's really fun for me to see families volunteering together, you know, where they're all out there 3 a.m. in the morning, you know, just kind of ready to pour cups of water and have a great time together as a family. You know, I'm a big believer in kind of looking for ways to give back to your community. And so, it's just fun to see families do that together. That's probably one of my favorite things.
That's a good one.
That's neat. So have you encountered many, problems and how have you handled them? I mean, I'm sure you have to really be able to think on your feet when you're out there.
Sure. Yeah. There's always little things that come up. I was, at the Expedition Everest, race. I was assigned to the expo. So over the course of 2 days for the Expedition Everest expo, I think we had probably close to 300 volunteers that worked at that one. And we had to kind of do a lot of switching back and forth because it was, you're kind of stuck at a table. And so you're trying to give people breaks to get away from their table where they're checking people in. So, they always have at a lot of the races, at least, in the expo area, they'll have some sort of like a photo spot. Where it looks like a good background to take photos at. And they did this at the Expedition Everest. They had it in the baseball stadium there. They did the expo kind of, or the check-in area, they kind of did that around the outside area of the baseball stadium. And they had this area set up that looked like a great background for photos. And that's why they set it up. But they didn't staff it with anyone. So I show up I'm looking at this line that's forming of people taking pictures in front of the Expedition Everest background. And I went to the Run Disney staff people. I said, hey, do we have anybody? Is Disney providing, you know, photo pass people for here? Are they going to have photographers out? And they said, no, they don't have anybody coming. And I said, all right, well, I've got two extra volunteers. I'm going to put them there and I'm going to have them manage the line of people that want to get pictures and offer to take them with their cell phones. So I had one person kind of managing the line and another person, you know, offering to take their picture with their cell phone. And that made the line go faster and it made a better experience for the people that were there. And it was easy because we had a few extra volunteers. So that was kind of one of those ones that we just kind of solved on the spot, you know.
Oh, cool.
And then I put that in my debrief report afterwards to the Run Disney staff. And hopefully next year they'll schedule people for that.
That's good. So my last question is something that you mentioned to Mike and I think just on a message that you noticed that there are some changes this year in the layout of the start and finish area. Could you share what those are?
Sure. You'll notice that especially, there's a few things. If you're at the 5K or the 10K, the corrals, the start corrals have moved into a different kind of a different location. They're in, I believe it's in the Wonder Lot. I'm just looking up at my map here. I believe it's the Wonder Lot is where it's moved to. So the corrals are just in a little different spot for the 5 and 10K. And the way that will affect you, especially for the 10K, is that the course through Epcot will change just a little bit. in order to, I guess what it did is when they moved the corrals, it had you entering Epcot quicker. And so they had to have you in Epcot a little bit longer. So they're routing you over by like the land pavilion in Epcot. So it just changes the route just a little bit. And then for all of the events throughout the whole weekend, you'll notice that the race retreat has moved. It used to be in the kind of the big family reunion area, kind of across from where the bag check is. And the race retreat has moved into the same parking lot where the finish line is and all the stands are for the cheer area. The race retreat has moved kind of behind that. So you'll come through the finish line to get your medal. You know, your friends cheer you on from the bleachers, and then race retreat is basically right there. So it's in a little different spot. And what that did is it freed up some space over in the other major area. So where the race retreat was is now where the stage, you know, where they always have like a DJ or somebody out there in the morning. That stage area has moved from kind of way down at the far end. It's moved over closer to the road that kind of goes in between the two areas. And so you've got the stage area there. And then concessions have moved a little bit to a little different spot. They moved the massage tent to a different spot and a self-treat area. They redesigned the information booth kind of thing that's kind of out in the middle. They redesigned that area. I think that that is it. They also have changed the way they're doing if you're doing your the Goofy or the Dopey, they've changed a little bit. As you check in this weekend, they're going to actually take your picture. And that'll then get fed into a computer. And so then when you come through to register for the fact that, you know, you're doing the next one, they're going to just pull up your picture at the end. I believe that's when you go to get your Dopey or your Goofy medals. They're going to pull up your picture, and it'll just let them know that you've actually run those races. So all they do is they type in your bib number into a computer, and then your picture pops up. So apparently there has been an issue with people wanting to get the Dopey or the Goofy medals, but maybe do it as a team effort.
So, oh, wow. Interesting.
One race, another person runs another race, they hand off the bib to somebody else.
Wow.
Which I don't know why you would do that.
Oh, gosh. It never even occurred to me. Wow.
So this kind of keeps people from doing that.
Unless they're running with their twin.
Then you could get away with it.
Could be. So, Phil, where the runner's retreat, race retreat tent used to be, what is going there now?
So where the race retreat tent was, that is now where the stage video area is.
Okay. And the retreat tent now goes, so as the runners are coming into the finish, the race retreat tent will be on their right, behind Rudy and all the announcers, Carissa?
It's big, so it's kind of directly in front of you. It's to your right and to your left because it's really big.
Oh, wow, okay. All right. Well, you know, Phil, I know that we're all busy, and we really want to we want to thank you for spending time today, and especially for all the volunteer work you've done. You've become a friend to the Mickey Miles podcast. You're actually a Mickey Miler, and we want to thank you for coming on and telling us all these wonderful stories. And it just is important for everyone to realize how much work goes into making a Run Disney event so well received by the runners, and it there's no doubt that a lot of it, I'd say, to me, it's like 75% is due to the volunteer work. So on behalf of all the runners, I want to thank you for all your work, and also thank you for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, you're welcome. And anybody who's listening who is planning on volunteering in the future, you can find me on Facebook through the Mickey Miles group. And if you reach out to me and say, hey, I'm going to be volunteering and I'd like to be on your team, I'm able to, as a team leader, I'm able to basically send a list of names to the Run Disney people and say, hey, these six people have registered and they've been approved as volunteers. Put them on my team. And then they just make sure those people go on my team. So it works out great.
That may be something I may want to do next year.
Terrific. Yeah. Terrific. Thank you so much, Phil. This was so interesting. Can't wait to see you soon.
Thanks. We'll see you this weekend.
So for number one, Run Disney volunteer, Phil Taylor from Claremont, Florida. For Michelle Scrivener-McLean, number one Mickey Miles podcaster. And for Mike Scopa, living the dream. We'll see you on the road.
The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com. And by All Star Vacation Homes, with locations in Kissimmee and Orlando. All Star Vacation Homes offers you alternatives for your Disney vacation with beautiful and affordable homes, condos, and townhomes near Walt Disney World. Hospitality has a new home, and its name is All Star Vacation Homes. Visit them at allstarvacationhomes.com.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/MickeyMilesPodcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/MickeyMilesPod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.